Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently.
Oh, hello, welcome to another Tech Talk, and we have got so much to get through as always. We've got tons of your emails, lots of fun stuff to get into, as always, as we talk tech for the next 60 minutes. And with me, I've got Robin Christofferson. Hello to you, Robin.
Hi, Stephen. Hi, listeners.
He's from AbilityNet, you know. He's Lord of AbilityNet. Lord Robin of AbilityNet. There, have I said it enough?
Yeah, thanks.
There you go. I've got Tim Schwartz. He's from lifeafterblindness.com. Hello to you, Tim.
Hello, Stephen. Hello, Robin. I don't have a title. I need like a Lord or a Sir or a something.
What's the equivalent in America? There must be an equivalent, is there?
I don't know.
I know you don't have any of that, do you?
And I think they're proud of it, too.
Burger King, I don't know.
Burger King. Oh, brilliant.
Tim
okay.
Burger King. Okay.
Tim Burger King. I think there's something in that, yeah. Oh. Okay, we've got Emails Andy as well. He has a title. He's Emails Andy. Hello.
Hello, nerds. How are you all?
How dare you? I resemble that remark.
I like those sweets. They're good, nerds.
Oh, do I remember those? Yeah,
I had those in ages. Yeah,
tasty.
I want some of those right now. Do you know what I've got over here? I've got Skittles. You like Skittles?
Ooh. Yeah,
I've got really,
this is the worst thing to have right before a show, because what happens? You have a couple, and then once you've tasted that rainbow, you can't get enough of it, and that's it. So all the way through the show, I'm so yeah, it's going to be a fun one. Anyway.
See, I have to be very careful because my wife's mother works for the company who makes, I don't know if you guys have these in the UK, but Airheads and Mentos. But then I believe what you guys do have is Fruitopia? Is that what those are called?
Pastels? No? Would
that be Mentos?
Well, yeah, I know you have Mentos, but I believe it's also Fruitopia or something like that. They're almost like Starbursts. But anyway,
Never mind.
Oh, okay, yeah, she works for the company that makes those, so I get them every time I want.
And we don't have them because... yeah, okay.
Moving on.
What are we talking about that one? Okay, right, fine.
The tech will start soon, I'm sure.
Yeah, okay, well, you started it there by saying nerds, didn't you? Well done, Andy. Yeah,
that's my fault. I've derailed
candy.
You a lot. Yeah.
Okay, well, look, let's get back to the tech because we have got lots to talk about. A new talking microwave is out from RNIB. Details on that coming up in a few moments. We'll also be checking in with Robin because he has an interview this week with Microsoft, don't you? And who are you talking with? Is it college, university? I'm very confused by this.
City University
of the College of London. Is that right?
Something
close
like
enough.
That.
So, yeah, what's the story about?
Yeah, it's the second phase of the Orbit project, which we covered a while ago, where they are calling for visually impaired people to help them record videos, more videos of things that are unique to visually impaired people.
Oh, like I remember this, yeah.
Yeah, cane or, you know, braille display or dog harness or something.
Right.
And yeah, there's a Microsoft tie-in now. It's exciting.
Okay. So we'll hear more about that. Also, our Technology for Life feature this week is on fitness. I love the enthusiasm of our Technology for Life team trying to get us fit. But yes, we're going to hear about the Nike training app and how accessible it is. Not that any of us will pay any attention and use it, but, you know, it's good to know it's there. It's always nice to know it's there. And, of course, your emails, lots of response. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about Braille, and I think quite a passionate discussion that we had around Braille. We're going to get some response from you on this because you've been emailing in your droves. Andy, let's do a quick check-in on the pages of emails that we have. How many pages do we have today?
Well, yeah, as you say, Stephen, we did get a boatload of emails regarding the Braille topic. So we're now up to 22 pages.
22 pages, which equals a boatload. What kind of boat are we talking here? Just, cruise ship or rowboat?
Cargo ship.
Cargo ship, right, okay. Yeah. That's pretty large.
22 pages.
Yeah, I was thinking with all these pages we keep getting, we need some sort of drop. You need some sort of music or sound effect. Maybe it's a boat.
Maybe it's now a boat. Yeah, we have to move on. So maybe it's goodbye to emails. Bye-bye, emails. Bye-bye. And instead we get some horn of a ship.
Let's try and turn this tanker around.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I think
no chance.
I think we need a bigger boat.
Nice. Very good. Very good. Okay, well, look, we're going to check in with our boatload of emails a bit later. But for now, let's talk about RNIB's new product release, which I want to tell you all about. Yes, RNIB have launched a brand new talking microwave. And to tell us more about it, I've got Claire Maxwell with me now from RNIB, who is in our products team. And also the blind chef, you may have spotted her on Facebook occasionally. Kim J is with us as well. Hi to you guys.
Hello.
Kim, let me start with you. You've been trialling out this new microwave from RNIB that is a talking microwave. Now, many blind people out there will know, of course, of the Cobalt talking microwave. It's been around for a long time, in some cases, in some people's homes for 20-odd years. But RNIB have launched this new microwave, and you've been trying it out.
I do have the Cobalt talking microwave. And I got this new microwave. Like most people that cook a lot, sort of one microwave is never enough. I always want two of everything. And I was seriously impressed. It is so simple to use. And unlike the Cobalt, which has an array of buttons and dials, and you have to work out which one is for the microwave, which one's the temperature, which one sets the timing, this is so simple. It has three buttons, which have raised tactile markings and a dial. And I have a neurological problem, so feeling anything that's tactile is always difficult. But this is raised enough for me to be able to use it. And it is 900 watts, which is very powerful. And it's that simple that, unlike the other microwave where we had to go through the instructions, I didn't even use the instructions. It took me literally a minute to work out what each button did. It is that simple and easy.
Wow, I mean, it sounds brilliant. And like you say, not having to read the instructions, which, you know, like you, I've got the Cobalt talking microwave as well. And I felt I had to go on a physics course to figure out how to operate most of the features. And most of the features I don't use. Do you find that? Do you find that with a lot of the additional functions that exist on a lot of these devices that you just don't use them?
Exactly. I mean, most of us use microwaves just to heat things up. So it's just putting it in, heating it up, and sometimes cooking things through. And you don't need 15 buttons to do that. You just need, you know, sort of the one button to do it. And this is the amazing thing about the RNIB microwave. The fact that with those three buttons, it's doing everything that the other microwave with 15 buttons is doing. And it talks it through with you, and it has more instructions. So simple things like when something is heating up, it actually gives you a countdown. So you can walk away from the kitchen or you can do something else, and it gives you a countdown every sort of 10 seconds of how much time you've got left. And then when you open the microwave, it actually says to you, be careful, the food is hot. Because most of us will open the microwave, go in, try and take something out, and the dish is hot, and we sort of forget. And this actually reminds you that it has a really good safety angle. And for me, the thing that I really do like the most is the fact that you can actually change the volume of the voice. So quite often, if I'm heating something up, I'll go into the other room and I can't hear the ping of the microwave. With this, I've put the volume up, go into the other room, and I can hear exactly when the food is cooked.
Well, it certainly sounds to me like you're sold on it, Kim, which is fantastic. Claire Maxwell, also with us here from RNIB's products team. And Claire, from your point of view, I mean, you've kind of reinvented the talking microwave, and you've simplified it in a lot of ways, which might surprise people.
Yeah, so we were listening to customer feedback, and we've been listening for a while to what people have been saying about the existing Cobalt microwave. And what we'd be hearing from customers was that they wanted something that was simple to use, that had fewer buttons and did fewer things in essence. So they didn't want complicated controls. They wanted something they could use straight out the box that had good tactile markings on it as well. And one of the things that Kim mentioned there about the volume was also something that customers said they wanted. They wanted to be able to have control over the voice, to be able to put it up or down as they needed to. They also wanted, as I said, the simplified buttons. So we have three buttons, as Kim said, and a dial as well. And we wanted to find a solution that would work for everyone. So we appreciate that not everyone is a Braille reader, might not have good tactile skills or have, you know, neurological issues that mean that they're not able to feel very small dots. So we found a solution in that we made large raised areas on the button, so dots that people can feel easily. And we've also incorporated a screen into the microwave. Now, this is something that was missing from the Cobalt microwave, but is useful for some people who might still rely on some residual vision. It's not large print, but it is clear in that it has white lettering on a black background as well. So it's white LEDs on a black background, so it's high contrast. So all of those features, we'd listen to our customers, and that's how we designed our microwave. And we also wanted to make it more affordable as well for our customers. As you said at the beginning, Stephen, it is a fairly expensive business sometimes to buy specialist equipment. And we have reduced that cost a little bit for our customers.
I've got to ask a question here, which I know many people will be wondering at home. I know I am. When you open the door, does it tell you the door's open?
Yes, it does.
Do you know, it's one of those funny features, right? I remember I talked about it on my show, and I kind of made a joke about it. You know, I said, wow, you know, a microwave that tells you the door's open. And then someone got in touch with me and said, yeah, well, it's all right you laughing about it, Stephen, but, you know, I live in a home with another blind person, and, you know, the microwave is positioned behind the door. So when the microwave door is open, that other person will then be able to know the door's open. And I was like, actually, you know what? That's a great feature. So really glad that's still in there, Claire. That's fantastic. Fantastic. Now, in terms of price, what are we talking? I mean, what's the comparison here?
So we're talking £185, excluding VAT, for our blind and partially sighted customers.
Now, Kim, if there's someone listening to this who is wondering, how does a blind person cook? Which I guess you must ask that all the time on YouTube. People are amazed at the fact you're able to do it. I mean, as a blind person, I'm not amazed that you can cook, but, you know, I'm always amazed that anyone can cook anything, to be honest. I can't figure it out. I'm useless in the kitchen. I can burn water. But from your point of view, I guess you do get all of those questions, and you answer those on YouTube, and I've seen you on Facebook as well. Tell us how people can follow you and find out more about you and connect with you.
Well, sort of the website, the Facebook, YouTube, just put in Kim J. Cooks, and there are videos on there. And I utilise all my senses. So when I do the videos, I describe the texture of the food. I describe how it feels, how it smells. And it's very simple. So there's no frills, there's no sort of, you know, massive descriptions that kind of take away from what you need to know. It is very basic, and it's very easy. And I think that being blind or visually impaired, that when you do cook, you actually cook better. Because unlike someone who is sighted, who only sort of relies mainly on their sight, we can use all our senses. And I know just by the touch of say a piece of steak, whether it's raw, whether it's well done, medium, rare, whereas everybody else just uses their sight and they're never very sure. And the other thing is, there's some amazing accessible equipment out there, and I have a whole range of them, from a talking food thermometer, my talking kitchen scales, which everyone asks me about. They are amazing. Measuring jugs, sort of, if you're going to burn water, try a water boiler alert. So it's always well worth ringing RNIB and just saying, well, I'm struggling with this. What equipment have you got that could help me?
Yeah, as Kim says there, Claire, you know, lots of other products are available from RNIB that can help you around the kitchen.
There are absolutely. We've got a wide range of kitchen equipment that can help support you with your cooking. As Kim said, when you're a blind cook, as I am indeed myself, perhaps not as good as Kim, but there are so many things that can help you in the kitchen. And, you know, as well as your sense of smell and your sense of touch being a really good advantage, but you can get our scales, our measuring jugs. We're also always adding to our range as well. So if there is something that you would like and that isn't on our shop, please give us a call, feedback to us, let us know, and we can always look at how we can develop that as well, as we did indeed with the microwave.
Brilliant. Well, all this can be found, of course, at rnib.org.uk/shop. You can also call the RNIB helpline on 0303 123 9999, or you can email the helpline, helpline@rnib.org.uk. For now, though, Claire Maxwell and Kim J, thank you so much for your time on RNIB Connect Radio today.
Thank you very much.
Okay, guys, let's get into the week's emails.
Email. We get your email every day. Here's your mail today.
That was the sound of the ship. Oh, that's my new sound of it. Do you like that?
Oh my god. We're going to need to edit that out, I think.
Man. Right, okay, let's get to the inbox then. A couple of weeks ago we talked about Braille, and we had that email in from one of our listeners suggesting that not having Braille in our lives makes you illiterate. And I wondered what our audience would make of that. Andy, it appears that everyone has a view on it.
Oh yeah, we've got some contrasting views, some passionate views. We're going to start off with one email that came in from Nessa. Hi Stephen, I learned Braille during the 50s on a hand frame and style. Still use this means. I have pocket frames too. She says, I also really enjoy your programs. So yeah, that's from Nessa.
Ah, well, there we go. That makes perfect sense.
That I think she meant stylus, but yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, it's stylus? But, you know.
Perfect.
Style.
Okay, yeah. Right, what else have we had? Because we've had a lot in.
Yes, jumping forward now to Nadia, who writes in, Hi, I'm writing in response to the email you received regarding your attitude to Braille. Firstly, I would like to offer you my support, as I believe the email was unfair to you. As great as Braille is, and I am proficient Braille user as I learnt it from the age of 5, it does have its limitations. Now, before I address those, I would just like to say that describing someone as illiterate for not reading Braille is utter nonsense. As Tim pointed out, many Braille users are able to type on a QWERTY keyboard, and yes, they have written read back to them, but you still need a knowledge of spelling and grammar to be able to correct your mistakes. There is also the sad fact that Braille is not just readily available. To use your example, Stephen, while I might be quite capable of reading War and Peace, that skill is not a lot of use to me on a daily basis. It doesn't help me to read the bus timetable or the menu in the restaurant or the newspaper left abandoned on the station platform. The fact is that, apart from medicines and the odd bottle of bleach, Braille is not widely used, and so for everyday things like speech and audio, it's obviously preferable. As Stephen pointed out, for creating labels and making notes, Braille is perfect, but it still remains cumbersome and expensive. If you order a Braille book from the RNIB library, it comes with several volumes that you can't easily carry around with you, and if you want a portable Braille, such as a Braille display, you need a small fortune at hand. She ends by saying, keep up the great work. I only have one complaint about the show, and that's you talk about Apple way too much. But if we were given the chance to air our views in the survey, I believe it is what people should do. Make the survey a more regular thing. P.S. Please keep up the joking. It's what makes your show preferable to listen over other tech shows, which just use language no one can understand, and it puts me to sleep. That's from Nadia.
Thank you, Nadia. I appreciate all that. I'm glad we use language you understand, because sometimes I've got no idea what we're talking about. So I'm glad someone does. But no, that's great, and I appreciate that. Really do. We've been into the show. What? I mean, we're 20 minutes in, and we haven't even mentioned the A word yet. I think that's pretty impressive.
Oh, we should put our hands up to it, though, shouldn't we? Apple and Amazon. They're our go to. Love topics, definitely. But you know,
if you're going to make a product that's really accessible, then you know, that's how it works.
I remember I brought this up with Stephen not long after I started working with Stephen, saying, you know, you do talk about Apple quite a lot on your show, but it's because it's an accessible product. It works, and it does exactly what he wants it to do.
Exactly.
So that's why it gets mentioned quite a lot. It's because it's a good product. And I can say that because on the Android.
Let's stay with the Braille though, because I know we've had a lot on this. What else do you have there, Andy?
This one's from Alan. Hi, Stephen, Robin, Tim and Andy. I'm writing in response to the email about Braille against other assisted technology. I was taught Braille in school and now I only use it when I'm reading, as I think there's a place for other forms of the written word as well. So it's what's best for the individual at the time, not what was there before, which was uniformity. Yeah, that's from Alan. Okay.
And what else?
Thanks, Alan.
We're going on to... Oh, sorry, Robin.
Thanks, Alan.
So polite, isn't he? So this, polite.
There you go.
Lord.
This is an email from Greg. He wants to also address Braille. I'm sending this in response to the comments on Braille literacy. Teaching a blind child Braille is extremely important. It is just as important as a sighted child learning to read and write print. However, it is a bit different if a person did not lose their sight until later in life. I didn't lose my sight until I was 27. I lost it suddenly from a diabetic complication. I was taught Braille both in grade 1 and grade 2 shortly after losing my sight. I didn't use it for much more than labelling for years. He says he's now 45. He finds reading Braille on paper to be very difficult. He does have a 4-year college degree, which goes back to the academic argument. I completed my degree with no Braille at all. One of the main reasons is that Braille displays are so expensive, I couldn't afford one. I was able to complete algebra, statistics, and all of my English courses with no issues. And this is because I learned how to read and write when I had sight. Is Braille literacy important for blind children? You better believe it is. It is just as important for those who are going to go blind later in life. Not so much. There are a couple of reasons why I'm trying to use it more now. One is that I was finally able to afford a Braille display and I can get one of the Orbit readers when they first came out. Secondly, it has to do with something Stephen said. After listening to my TTS for a while...
Text-to-speech.
After listening to my text-to-speech for a while, it starts to hurt my ears and I want a break. Yes. This is where Braille comes in.
Yes.
That's from
Greg. More with you, Greg. And I think that's it. It's the nuance here, isn't it? Because it goes back to this point that there is a division. And it's not a bad division. It's just a reality here that if you're born blind, learning Braille, I say, is essential to your success. I mean, how many people do we know who are blind lawyers, who've gone on to be blind accountants, you know, because they've had Braille in their life from that early stage? You know, there's people I know who were completely blind who learned Braille and just had a great career. Not everybody, obviously. I mean, it's just like anything else in life. It's, you know, you get the skills you do with what you can with them. And some people are successful and some people aren't. I didn't have Braille in my life. I thought I contributed that to, you know, why I didn't do quite so well academically. I don't know. Maybe it is, maybe it's not. Maybe I'm just stupid. I probably am. Let's just put it that way. But I think, you know, it is important to have it. And it does make a difference. Coming into later in life, though, I don't think I'm ever going to get to a stage where I'll ever become a lawyer. At least I don't think anyone would want me as their lawyer. So, you know, it's unlikely to happen. But, you know, having the skill for labelling, for you know, for basic reading, for, you know, notes, I think is the key. So, yeah, I'm with you on that, but, Greg.
And as Greg said, like we all mentioned when we had our passionate discussion about it, you know, children that are either born blind or becoming blind as a child, yeah, Braille literacy is so important, I believe, in that case. Mm-hmm. To get through school at such a young age, Braille's going to be very, very helpful, as we've all talked about. But there is definitely a difference if you're, you know, losing your vision or going blind much, much later in life, as you just said, Stephen, depending on what your career path is or what you're doing, what your personal specific needs are. But as we said, it's just another tool to put in that toolkit of assistive tech or blind tech, whatever that we may or may not need to use. But it's not a bad skill to have. It just depends on your situation.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, we'll get some more on this.
Yeah, here's one from Michael. Dear gentlemen, personally, I think it's great that more people are learning Braille. Being a Braille reader myself, and I have been since the age of 5, and I'm now touching 70. It's sad in a way that Braille is difficult to learn in mainstream schooling today. I suppose in my day, having gone to the specialist schools for the blind helped with learning Braille, as that's all there were to do in those days. I love modern technology, but Braille will always be my first preferred format, as it does help me with typing on my Apple 7 mobile for text and internet, as I'm useless trying to use the onboard keyboard. And it goes without saying that I would certainly struggle without Braille in my everyday life. Keep up the good work. Your program is much appreciated and loved. Kindest regards. That's from Michael.
Oh, thanks, Michael.
Aww. What a guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's nice.
Thanks.
It is really important that kids learn Braille, and it seems crazy to me that we're having to almost fight the corner here for kids. I think that's kind of why I'm keen to have this discussion so much. Not for, you know, us fuddy-duddies. I put myself into a very old category all of a sudden. But, you know, I mean, I'm not at school anymore, obviously. You know, why should I care? But truth is that, you know, kids growing up, you know, it's so important that they learn this. And it just doesn't seem to be a skill that's available. And I go back to my point I've made before that, you know, if you're partially sighted, it's often the case that teachers will say, well, you don't need it. You've got enough vision, computers can talk, your phone can talk, the technology is far better now. I mean, I was getting that at a time when nothing was particularly accessible. You know, we didn't have mobile phones really at that time, not anything that was like what we have now. And, you know, computers could talk, but it was HAL, and, you know, it was all very basic, and Supernova was in its infancy, and that's what I was kind of playing around with. You know, everything was all kind of new at that stage. And even then I was being told, nah, you don't need it. Computers will take you through. It was a deep misunderstanding about visual impairment and how it impacts. And, you know, going back to, I think it was Greg who said, you know, just wanting sometimes to just not have the text-to-speech, not have that JAWS voice or the NVDA voice whitter on at you. You know, I sit there sometimes, my laptop's on, and it just infuriates me, the noise that's coming at me. And I don't soak in the information the same way. When I turn on the Braille display, I do take it in better. I just read it. I get more out of it. I'm just not fast enough at the moment to be efficient enough with it. That's the problem. Okay, let's get one more email on this. I know there's lots come in, but let's get one more on this.
Friend of the show, Billy Burrell, has contacted in as well. He says, hey guys, after listening to your latest podcast, I felt so angry I had to get in touch. Your listeners' comments were, in my opinion, offensive and diversive. To say that someone who is blind and can't use Braille is illiterate is absolutely outrageous. It's like those people who say listening to audiobooks isn't reading, or the differentiate between blind and partially sighted people. I have had no useful vision for 11 years now, and I don't feel any more qualified to speak about sight loss than someone who, for example, has lost part of their vision. We're all in the same boat. I agree that Braille is or can be a useful tool in certain situations, but in no way do I consider it a necessity these days. Like many others, I lost my sight later in life. I was 45, and when I began learning Braille, I enjoyed typing it on a Perkins machine, but unless I was reading it on a heavy Brailing paper, I found it quite difficult. Perhaps it is, as I've heard some people say, the sensitivity in your fingertips. Like many other things, it diminishes with age. I struggled with Braille on packaging, especially medication packets and boxes. The microscopic dots they put on things are ridiculous. Mm. While I do think Braille is something that all blind children should be taught, I think that assistive technology is the future, and I would encourage everyone to familiarise themselves with as much of it as possible. Best wishes. That's from Billy Bob.
Yeah, again, it just comes back to that central point, you know, more tools in the toolbox, isn't it, Tim, that you've got to have all these tools, not just one.
It absolutely is, and it's good to remember the approach, because the journey might be similar, but how we got there is sometimes completely different, or probably all the time is completely different. On Life After Blindness, I've done a couple of roundtable podcasts earlier in the year where we talked about the differences between, you know, how do you cope with vision loss later in life, or at some point, you know, later on, or being born blind? And the discovery that I came away from those two roundtable discussions was how you got started, you know, with your vision loss, either being born blind or losing vision later. Obviously, that's a different process. But once we were all in it, we're in it together, and we have a lot of the same or similar experiences and you know, good, bad, indifferent, all of it, and, you know, and so it's good to remember that we are all different in our approach or in our journey, maybe sometimes, but at the same time, we're all kind of having to figure this all out in the same way. So having Braille as one of those tools is not a bad thing, but if you don't have it, that's not really a bad thing either.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Okay, look, we'll leave it there, because we could go on about this and we could talk about this all day. We could do another show on it, quite simply, but we've got lots of other things to talk about. Coming up, we'll be hearing from Mark Evans at Technology for Life here at RNIB. He's telling us all about the Nike training app. But first, let's talk about the future and what can be. Robin has a great story to tell us this week.
I am here with Leda of City University London and Daniela of Microsoft. Guys, do you want to just briefly introduce yourselves?
Sure. So I'm Leda. I'm a research fellow at City University of London. I work in the Centre of Human-Computer Interaction Design.
Hi, I'm Daniela Massacerti. I'm a machine learning researcher at Microsoft Research in Cambridge in the UK. If we think of what current recognizers can do in apps like Seeing AI, they can really only recognize generic types of objects like mug or keys. But there's a whole bunch of more specific personal detail which we attach to our objects. We don't just have keys, we have house keys or the shed key or my backdoor keys or my car keys. And so that's the kind of personalized object recognition which we're interested in with the Orbit project. How will a personalizable object recognizer work? We're imagining that first a user would collect, say, 4 or 5 videos of an object that is important to them. So for example, their house keys. The machine learning model, which is in Seeing AI, will then learn how to recognize that object from just those videos that the user has selected. And then now that the recognizer has been personalized, it will be able to recognize those house keys in other scenarios around the user's common environments. And we can imagine that a user would be able to repeat this for any number of personal objects or objects that are important to them. So in this case, really building a personalizer, an object recognizer that is personalized to them.
So do you see a time when Seeing AI users will be able to teach objects that are specific to them?
Yes, definitely. And that is one of the main motivations for collecting the Orbit data set, so that we can build better machine learning models that can do this personalization. And so when we deploy it in the real world, a user would only need to collect 5 or 6 examples or 5 or 6 videos of a new personal object and then almost immediately be able to personalize their recognizer to recognize that object.
Wow, that is brilliant. Really good.
And so, hopefully the Orbit dataset collection, which we're hoping people will be interested in contributing to, will help us achieve this goal.
For this phase, we are looking for participants who are over 18 years old, who are blind or have a low vision and have an iPad or iPad. So we ask them to use an iPhone app to take short videos of things that are important to them. So we ask participants to select 5 objects that are important to them and take 7 videos of each object in various settings. And anyone that is interested to take part can find all the information on our website at orbit.city.ac.uk. So from there, if you navigate on the data collection tab, you can find all the information of the project.
You will be able to select a charity of your choice. And once you've completed your videos, £25 will be donated to one of those charities, which are all charities to support the blind and low vision community.
What a brilliant incentive. So Daniela, just to finish off, when can we see it, hopefully, augmenting Seeing AI's functionality?
Yeah, we're working very closely with Seeing AI to bring this to life. So hopefully the data set collection will conclude by the end of this year. And then next year, our focus will be on building basic prototypes and eventually getting those prototypes deployed into Seeing AI next year, if all goes to plan.
Brilliant. Any final comments?
We are also organizing some online training sessions through Zoom, where during the sessions we will give some more information, background on the project and what are the benefits to the blind and low vision community. We will also take people through the steps to record videos of the things that they selected, and it will also be a good opportunity for people that are interested to ask us any questions. All the information about the training sessions can be found on their website, and we will also planning to record the session, so you can find the recording there as well.
And that website address again is orbit.city.ac.uk, and tap on or click on the data collection tab. Leda and Daniela, thank you very much. If you open Microsoft's Seeing AI app since its latest update, you will hear:
Microsoft and City University of London are partnering on a research project to improve object recognition for people who are blind or have low vision. Participants will record videos of objects in their environments. If you are interested in participating, click here to learn more.
If you click on that, you will get information about how you can participate. It will take about an hour of your time, and it will help increase that database, that open database, which will be used by apps like Seeing AI. Now, if we hit the close button.
Close button. Scene preview.
So here we are on the scene preview channel. This is where you can hold your camera up and it will recognize objects around you. But if I flick.
Take picture button.
You'll see that this requires you to take a picture. So it's not a live camera view, which will tell you everything that was in front of you, even if it could recognize objects like a white cane or a dog, guide dog's harness, for example. So let's just go out of Seeing AI.
Camera.
And I'm back on my homepage, and I wanted to show you something in the camera app in iOS 14. So here we are, it landed on the camera. Let's open that.
Viewfinder. Focus unlocked. Flash on. Image. Zero now, people. Oh, tilt right. Oh, level.
Okay, it's level now.
Window.
All I'm doing here.
Table. With processed.
All I'm doing here is just moving the camera around. The back-facing camera is active. It told me to straighten up the camera. So it gives you announcements about how many faces it can see. But now, since iOS 14, what objects it can see real time. That's the key thing here. So if I keep moving it around.
Computer keyboard. Tilt right. Level.
Okay. So I'm in the office here. There's lots of office-y type.
Document. Microphone.
Obviously, tilt
right. Oh. Level.
Moving it around.
Computer mouse lead. Frame. Painting.
There is a picture on the wall.
Door. Tilt right.
Oh, so hard to keep it level.
Level. Television.
So there you go. It's recognizing lots of objects around. If I tilt the back of the camera to face me.
One face near top right edge. Robin near top edge.
That's
tilt
me.
Left. Robin near top right edge.
So it can recognize people as well. So this is brilliant. I'm just moving it around. And just imagine if.
Level.
Oh, this can now.
Zero people. Computer monitor.
Yep.
Computer keyboard. Speakers music.
Speakers music. I don't know why it said that. There are speakers, but I don't know what the music bit is. So just imagine if this was now able to have access to that data set as well and recognize objects that are specific to people with a vision impairment. Just think how much more powerful it would be. But yes, so now this is all built into iOS 14's camera app. Just make sure that the focus is on the viewfinder and this is what you will hear. Let's close that.
Camera.
There you go, guys. How cool is that?
Very cool. Thank you for that, Robin. Now, we'll get back to the guys in a moment, but first, let's turn to Mark Evans from our Technology for Life team. Every week on the show, we hear another story from the team, and this week, it's all about the Nike training app. Here is Mark Evans from the Technology for Life team to explain more.
Hello there. Today, I'm going to talk to you about a brilliant application I've found to help us keep fit and stay active, whether that's during lockdown or over Christmas, or even in the January to clear away the blues. It's called the Nike Training Center, and it's available for both Apple and Android, and it's currently free, and it's accessible with both magnification and voiceover on Apple and magnification and talkback on Android. What I love about it personally is there are five control options along the bottom of the application when you first load it up, which consist of feed, so letting you know what's going on, giving you tips, giving you information, essentially sort of some advertising as well. You've then got your activities, so you can add your workouts, any kind of activity you've done in terms of the length, the type, and sort of the difficulty. You've also got the ability to track then through the whole month to see what activities you've done. And it's quite nice to see your progress. You've also got your main workouts page, which is the third option along. And within here, we can look at ideal workouts for us. We can browse workouts and look via muscle group, workout focus, or equipment. as well as other subcategories. We can also search for a workout on there as well. Also, we have the option to see our notifications, and we can also bookmark our favourite workouts. Expert tips is also available, and we can scroll from left to right to move through on a particular area, whether it's diet, jogging. We can go to help from an expert. And again, there's a whole array of sub-options in terms of recovery, etc. We've also got an option called Program. This is currently free. We can take up different programs. They used to be charged for this, and there are different program classes you can watch and follow. All of these sessions have great visual indicators, and the speech within them tells us exactly where to put our legs and our arms, what to do during the exercise. Very, very useful for blind and partially sighted people as we are when it comes to exercising. The final option is the shop, where there's all different types of Nike merchandise, clothing, shoes, accessories, balls, etc. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to download a workout now. I'm in my profile and I'm actually going to go to browse, and I'm actually going to go to an equipment-based workout, and I'm going to click a basic equipment-based workout, and I'm going to click a core strength workout. So I can click this, and what I have is I have the option to basically to download, to add music, or to actually change any specific settings. It also gives me an information guide on how hard the workout is and what it's good for. So for example, this one says good for core training and hip strength, and all I need for it is a yoga mat. So if I start the download.
Welcome to Gracie Gold's workout, exclusively for Nike Training Club. Skating is a combination of power, balance, flexibility, and control. At the heart of all those things is a strong core. This Pilates workout strengthens and lengthens the legs, increases flexibility, and engages the core. So get ready and grab your mat. It's time to go. The 100 for 1 minute. Keep your heels together and toes apart. Engage the core. Palms just above the floor.
So as you can see, it's clearly given us that information on that particular exercise and activity, as well as the ability to actually give us a visual countdown timer and then an audible countdown timer. So I would highly recommend everybody downloads that and gives it a go. If you want further information, you can come back to us via the helpline, RNIB helpline, 0303 123 9999, or email us TFL, Technology for Life, at rnib.org.uk. Thank you.
Thanks to Mark there, and there's lots more coming up on next week's Tech Talk from Technology for Life. You can contact them, as Mark says, by calling the RNIB helpline on 0303 123 9999 or email helpline at rnib.org.uk. Now, guys, not so much news this week we're focusing on, but we are focusing in on lots of our emails.
Email. We get email.
Yeah, you get the idea. Right, okay.
Do the noise again, Stephen. Do the noise then.
I think I need to work on that. I'll need to work on that one. That's not a bought-in effect. I mean, I just want to be clear on this. People might be thinking that's a real ship horn. It's not, okay? That was me doing that.
Just in case there was confusion out there.
In case there was any confusion. Because I'll be honest, I have no idea what a ship horn even sounds like. I think that's what it sounds like. But having never been on a ship, indeed a cargo ship, as Andy suggested this was.
Yeah. We are on HMS Tech Talk.
And it's taking water.
And we're currently...
Don't confuse Stephen for a large ship. Abandoned ship, yeah.
Right, let's get back to the inbox then. Plenty of other topics coming up this week.
Yes, HMS Tech Talk is currently cruising into Queensland. And we're getting an email from Des, who says... Hello all again, it's Des from the Sunshine Coast of Queensland, Australia.
Okay. All right, Des, get off your high horse.
Okay, I know the keys to find the Windows version in JAWS is Insert, Control and V. However, I prefer to use, as I do the press the Windows key and then type in Winver and then press Enter. And this will tell you the version and all of the numbers. Des has also given some very detailed instructions to Stephen on how to defrost his deep freeze. We don't need to do that. It's not technology-based. So I'll pass those to you privately, Stephen. But yeah, that's an email from Des.
Technology. It has got a plug on it.
Well, the solution on defrosting it isn't tech-themed, unless you want to say...
Oh, okay, hang on. What is it then? Because I would normally go for a hairdryer.
Oh, okay. Well, that's kind of tech. Yeah, no, he's saying to take all of the food out of the freezer naturally, then with a bottle, tap all of the ice on the sides of the freezer and it'll fall into the bottom. And then you use a dustpan, and a dustpan isn't tech-related.
It with a bottle. What, a glass bottle? Plastic bottle? What kind of bottle are we talking about here?
I think he says glass.
More details.
Put water in the plastic bottle to make it heavy. Just something that doesn't have
shelf
sides. Oh, this
sounds like work.
Basically.
I'm not doing this. I don't even remember.
I don't even remember you talking about needing to defrost your freezer.
No, I don't remember it at all. I may have brought it up at some point on some show somewhere, but I don't think it was here.
Okay, this is 6 months ago. Let's face it. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Just
this
to
who knows. Yeah. Merry Christmas.
Clarify there. Winver, one word.
Yes. W-I-N-V-E-R. Yeah. Okay. What else have we got, Andy?
Hello, everyone, says Negative Julian, who is also now known as Julian the Second.
Julian minus two, if he's negative. Just throwing that out there.
Julian the Second. A special greeting to sighted guy Andy. You, sir, are a star. The things you have to put up with in your pursuit of programming excellence, trials and tribulations nobly borne. I like that. I think we should just end that email there. That's brilliant.
Mr. I see why this was picked to be ready.
Yeah, you can see why I've been waiting on this for months. Mr. Scott, why did you slap down the splendid Andy when he suggested that a replacement launcher on our smartphones and tablets can be really useful to at least some of us VIPs? As a severely sight-impaired person, I can assure you that they are of great use to me. The big thing for me is contrast. The state of my sight is that I am totally blind in my right eye and totally blind across two-thirds of my left eye. From one corner of that eye, I have little residual vision. I can pick up movement to some extent, and if the contrast is high enough, vaguely pick out some objects, i.e. a lamppost in a bright sky. And at close range, I can detect bright red and yellow. No subtlety in shading, of course. On good days, just with the right lighting, I can convince myself that I can make out light blue. That's it. Why I'm telling you all that is because in practical terms, I can tell whether or not my phone is turned on and where the icons are. I cannot tell what they are, mind you, so I am reliant upon screen readers, but I can see where they are. And if the contrast against the background is very high, to this end, whenever I get a new device, one of the first things I do is a jet black wallpaper, because this on its own is not enough. The integrated icon set is almost always a multicolored affair, so I can only detect the light colored ones. This is the principal reason why then I install a replacement launcher, and with that in place, I can choose my own icon pack. Almost always, in my case, a set of square white icons. Third-party launchers often allow a greater control of icon size than stock launchers do, and that is also to my advantage. There are generally other gains as well. In the case of Nova Launcher, which I believe is the one that I recommended, and he says, oh yeah, by the remarkable Andy, I find that the ability to group apps together in the app drawer, either as a folder or as a tab, is a great boon in organization. For instance, all of my music players can be grouped under one tab, and all of my icon sets under another, and so on. I commend replacement launchers to the assembled populace. Regards, that's Julian the Second.
Okay, well, thank you for that, Julian. I mean, my only takeaway from that would be just, you know, I don't know how that works with TalkBack. That's the only problem. This is, again, the issue. You know, for low-vision people, this will work great. Clearly, in your case, Julian, that's brilliant. But, you know, if you put a screen reader on there, what's that going to be like? I don't know. Maybe someone can tell us.
I think we can assume that it must be okay, because if he's got that level of vision, he must be using speech primarily. But, yeah. That's good input, thanks.
Yeah. Ooh, that was passive-aggressive, wasn't it? Right, okay.
Not enough praise for Robin there, I think.
It really was. To be honest, I was trying to remember who it was. Thanks, Julian.
Julian, negative the Julian.
Second, yeah. Third.
Minus two.
Minus two. Right. Okay, what else have we got?
An email from Ross Meegan. Hello, Tech Talk. I've just started a new job and I'm about to start using JAWS and Zoom Text for the very first time. Previously, I'd always used a Chromebook, which uses a screen reader called ChromeVox. My new work laptop just arrived. It has 16 gig of RAM and an i5 processor, which should hopefully be able to handle Zoom Text Fusion package well. My new laptop isn't touchscreen, but it will be hooked up to a touchscreen monitor when I'll be able to use as my primary screen. Will I be able to interact with the touchscreen using JAWS on my touchscreen monitor, even though the monitor is attached to a laptop that isn't touchscreen? Secondly, I've also got the Zoom Text keyboard because it's large, clear, and easy to use, and it also works well with Zoom Text features, so I'm told. I was wondering if you have any experience of using this product. And lastly, I'll be using the Microsoft Comfort Mouse 4500 as part of my setup because it has customizable buttons, and I still have enough sight to use get some use out of a mouse. I've heard so many people saying to forget about the mouse when I'm using JAWS, but there is surely must be some features built into JAWS that makes the mouse useful and enabled me to use it alongside my keyboard. Best wishes. That's from Ross.
Okay, well, quite a lot to unpack from that one. Let's start from the beginning. So let's rewind a little bit into that email. Let's start again with the specific questions.
So the first one was the touchscreen. Can he use or can he interact with the touchscreen using JAWS on his touchscreen monitor, even though the monitor is attached to a laptop that isn't a touchscreen?
With the most recent versions of JAWS, yeah, that should be fine, right? I haven't personally used touchscreen with JAWS, but I know people who have, and it seems to work okay.
Okay, right, let's go to the second point in his email.
Have any of you had any experience with the Zoom Text keyboard?
Yeah, but funnily enough, my wife uses the Zoom Text keyboard, and she loves it. I found it was a bit too... it's just the keyboard style. It was a bit too spongy for me. I wasn't a big fan of it. I prefer the... I got the MX keys for Mac, which is the... I think it's the same price, actually. And that, obviously, is for my Mac, but it can work on Windows, it can work on the iPhone or any other device, actually, via Bluetooth. It's just laid out in the Mac style, which suits me. You can get a PC version as well, and I found that brilliant. But the Zoom Text keyboard, obviously, is built with Zoom Text in mind. And it seems that you're in a place where you're in that middle ground where I was a good few years back, where you're kind of going from Zoom Text, but you really probably need to learn JAWS. I think this is a really interesting area for people because, you know, there are people who, and I think you were in this case, you were in this space at one time, Tim, where you were kind of, you know, using magnification, and then you had to make that transition to JAWS. Should he just make the jump now? Would it be better to just make the move and learn JAWS and just stick with that rather than trying to use a system that he may only be using for a short period?
You know, Stephen, this is very much like the Braille discussion, but maybe even more personal, because you and I have talked about this even here and other places before. That transition can be so specific to you, but I always tell people, if you're getting to a point where either A, you've got any kind of eye strain or headaches or anything like that, difficulty using the computer, if you find that using it with large print or zooming in on text is causing any kind of deficiency in how, you know, proficient you are and how your ability to actually use it is slowing down. And then, as I kind of had happen with my transition, when you're getting maybe half a word, maybe even a whole word, but, you know, one word or half a word on the screen at once, that's slowing your productivity down. So it just depends on where you are in that. But it is obviously an individual thing, because learning JAWS and throwing away everything else, you know, pushing that mouse away, only using a keyboard, no large print, even if you can still see some, can be very daunting and can be, well, you know, can be kind of anxiety ridden. And so it is a big jump. But there is a point where you might have to just say, you know what, it's easier. When I did it, you know what you're alluding to, Stephen? Yeah, when I did it, I ended up being faster. I found that I was able to use JAWS shortcuts and do things in a much faster way than trying to navigate around, hoping to find things visually, because it was just too big and getting too cumbersome. But that was me. So yeah, it just depends.
I still struggle to this day with taking in the information audibly than trying to see it. And the best example of a new experience with something like JAWS only, and, you know, never having used an application before, was Microsoft Teams. I'd never used Microsoft Teams with Vision. And then all of a sudden I was using it only with JAWS. And what was interesting was people would say to me things like, you know, oh, it's on the bottom right, you'll find the button. And I'm like, I don't even know what that means. I don't even know how this is laid out. So, you know, it does. It can help, it can hinder, it's good, it's bad. But, you know, interesting, so one of the points that was brought up was about the mouse and what he can do with the mouse. And there's not a lot, really, you can do with the mouse with JAWS. I know the mouse does work, and I think if you roll your mouse over the screen, it will talk things, but it's not really for that, is it, Robin? It's not. That's not.
Well,
really,
I mean, it is pretty good support. So for and it's kind of tied in with the touch capability as well, because, you know, it's kind of when you've got the mouse pointer over something, or when your finger touches something, what do you want to do with it? Do you want to speak out the control? If you're over text, do you want to speak out the single character, the word, right down to the paragraph? And if you do a search for mouse in JAWS's settings center, you'll find 9 different choices. And you can explore that to find out exactly how you want mouse echo and mouse behavior to be handled by JAWS. So, you know, it wasn't an afterthought. They've done a good job. I wouldn't use it myself. You know, it's open to everyone, whether you've got no vision or some. I think particularly with Fusion, if you have, you know, you're going to be using the mouse quite a lot. So to be able to govern what is being spoken back, I think is really useful. So have a play with those.
Okay, well, thank you for that, Robin. Luke, if you've got any more questions, do get in touch with us. I'll give you the contact details again in just a moment. But just a note on next week's show. We're going to be talking, of course, all about Apple next week. Didn't mention Apple much this week at all, but we'll be talking about it next week because they're having their One More Thing event this week. So we're looking forward to finding out what's coming out. Likelihood is it will be new MacBooks, we're imagining. By the time you're listening to this, you might already know the answer, but we will be giving you our reaction, Tech Talk reaction, here on next week's programme. Plus, we'll be finding out about a fantastic app called Dolphin Easy Reader. Lots of you probably already use this app, but did you know you can now get it on your Amazon Fire tablet? Well, you can. We're going to tell you all about that and hear from Amazon themselves joining us on the show next week. So maybe you've got a question you want to ask Amazon. Well, send in. You can email us, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That is our email address. And you can get in touch with us. We'll get to your questions. More of those questions coming up as well on next week's programme. So do stick around for that. In the meantime, though, thank you, as always, to the guys for joining me. We'll get back into the email inbox next week, guys. Of course, the boat itself shall be relaunched next week. Yes, the boatload of emails. Back next week.
Thanks very much. I think we should all jump ship after this.
Tim Schwartz, lifeafterblindness.com, thank you.
Thank you very much, I think.
And thank you to Emails Andy.
Thank you, anchors away.
Do the sound.
Bye.
Thanks, guys.
Oh dear. Bye.